Welcome! The World Cup is upon us, and as true procrastinators, we've waited until just before the tournament start to do our first World Cup podcast. Germany are gearing up for their World Cup title defense. We discuss who's in and who's out, the controversy surrounding Ilkay Gundogan and Mesut Ozil, and are they actually going to go back-to-back? Plus, we talk about who we are most excited to watch in Russia. This is the World Cup from the Tribune. Davis Van Opdorp here with Felix Thompson and Matt Ford. We are a day away from the start of the World Cup, so we think that there is no better time than any to do one last preview for it. There's probably been so many preview podcasts that I can't even count, but we're going to do one anyways, and we hope that you guys enjoy it. So obviously we're going to be focusing a lot on Germany because that's where our expertise is. And I think that the best way to start this conversation is to basically ask, is this team better than it was 4 years ago, Matt?
Don't think you can really answer it with a straight up yes or no. Obviously, there's been major changes, but I think on the whole, you wouldn't say the changes have been compensated for in a negative way. The ones that stand out, obviously, Philip Lahm gone, but a simple replacement there in Joshua Kimmich. You don't really see a problem there, not in my opinion anyway. Bastian Schweinsteiger, and yet the way Toni Kroos and Sami Khedira have stepped up in the last few years, I don't see an issue there either. One of the more interesting changes, which I think could benefit Germany quite well, and we'll probably come on to it later as well, is the addition of Timo Werner up front. Will add a slightly different tactical aspect to Germany, perhaps make them slightly more direct. I'm interested to see how that works out. I think that could be a positive one too.
Yeah, I think that's actually, one absence that people aren't really talking about, I haven't heard many people talk about, is the fact that Miroslav Klose is not going to be at this World Cup for the first time in forever. I mean, even though he, at the end of his career, when he was in his mid-30s, he was still one of the best strikers on Germany's team, and that's why he kept playing in the semifinals and the final.
Well, he's technically there in a coaching role, isn't he? He's
right, no, but I mean on the field, like putting goals in the net, you know. So
again, it was a foreseeable change, though. He didn't start all the games automatically in Brazil either, so that was foreseeable. So it's not like it's a change that's been thrust upon Germany with no planning. But like I said, given the fact that it's opened the way for Timo Werner to to come in as well, it's probably a change which is going to benefit Germany slightly, I think, overall.
Felix, is this team better than it was 4 years ago?
I'm going to agree with Matt. It's not a straight up yes or no, but I do think the changes in the squad, you get the sense that they're balanced. You get the sense that good players have been called up instead of those that are no longer with us in professional terms. And the addition of the likes of Werner, Rudiger, even the likes of Rudi in midfield. I think generally speaking, this is a very balanced German squad and people are right to expect a lot from them. So I definitely see them going far, absolutely.
It is nice that Sebastian Rudi finally got his chance to go to the World Cup, especially after he was in the running actually to go to the last one. And obviously to the Euros, I think he was in the final cuts in both of those instances. And this time he was in the final cuts again, but this time Löw decided to give him his chance. I think that's an interesting one because he brought I don't really want to compare them too much, but he brought a similar player in Julian Weigl to the Euros. And do you think that Sebastian Rudi? What do you think he can do? Because I mean they have a set midfield, so. I don't know how much of a role he'll play, but I still think it's an interesting player to add.
Interesting, yeah, but obviously nowhere near a starting role. But I think one of the reasons which might have gone in his favour is the fact that he is a Bayern Munich player. And I'm not saying that's some sort of favouritism being shown towards Bayern Munich, not at all. But the fact that you do have that spine of the team going up from Neuer through Boateng and Hummels into the likes of Rudi in midfield as well, I think that can help. It's definitely not a hindrance, is it, having that sort of that spine from club level in the squad as well. Taking him over Julian Weigl, I think, is a correct decision as well. I think we've mentioned before that I don't think necessarily all Weigl's fault that he's had a bit of an off-season with Borussia Dortmund because the circumstances haven't been ideal. So it just adds to that ridiculous amount of depth that they have in midfield, doesn't it? so I don't see any issues there. The player I'm more sort of pleased for, I suppose, on a even on a sort of personal level, is the fact that Marco Reus is finally going to a World Cup. I believe he survived the flight as well. He's still not injured. Yeah, so we'll see how those final training sessions go.
There was that picture on social media that I think was shared around all of the team where he was basically going over, basically with that face that he had leaning over the seat.
It's a great story on a personal level and also on just purely professionally as well. I mean, obviously it's great that he's finally made it. He's deserved it the way he's come back into the Dortmund team this season. He's been one of few shining lights for them. And he'll be important for Germany too, especially given obviously the absence of Leroy Sané has been a huge topic as well. Mario Götze not there either for understandable reasons. Schürrle also for understandable reasons. So you're looking at where that creativity is going to come from. Where I think at some point in 2016 at the Euros, Germany even seemed to lack that slightly. When they didn't seem to be able to break down defences when it really came to push, especially in that semi-final against France. That's exactly what they're going to be expecting from Marco Reus.
Felix, do you expect Marco Reus to start?
I actually do. I think given Löw's tactical choices, given his squad choices, I really do expect Marco Reus to have a key role. Well, given the fact that he'll stay fit, that's a big question, of course. But if he will stay fit, I do expect him to be a key player. I think Löw was sort of waiting for him during previous tournament, and it didn't work out, mostly due to his fitness, obviously. But at the end of the day, given his form with Borussia Dortmund, he looks sharp, he looks good, and he could bring the extra attacking spark that Germany was lacking, as Matt said, in certain parts of the last World Cup. So I definitely expect him to be a key player. Just one word about Rudi and Bayern. I do think that the fact that he is at Bayern also adds a bit to his profile in the eyes of Löw, in the sense that he got a lot more experience in that year playing Champions League football, winning the league. That adds that extra bit of experience that sometimes makes the difference for a coach like Löw. So I think that, as Matt just said, it makes total sense.
And the same applies to Niklas Süle at the back as well. Not a starter, but having that experience, that added little bit that both of those have gathered this season with Bayern.
Well, Süle's interesting because he basically is the player that has experience with both Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels, playing with both of them when the other was either injured or just getting some rest. So that's a huge asset for Löw, that if one of them gets hurt, then he has a defender that has played with them an entire season with them, spent an entire season with them. And that's an asset that not a lot of other teams at the World Cup have. You can maybe say Brazil has some of those aspects, considering that, of course, Miranda has had some in recent years has had some experience both with Marquinhos and Thiago Silva. But other than that, you don't have that kind of trinity of center backs talent that you could even use all at the same time. So you mentioned it earlier, Matt. Obviously, Leroy Sané, you were talking a lot about Sebastian Rudi. One could argue that the spot that he took was from Leroy Sané. And I think that there was a lot of people in England especially that were outraged that he wasn't going, considering he did so well in the Premier League. But I wasn't really that surprised that he didn't go. What do you guys think?
I was torn. I suppose on the one hand, I was slightly surprised because, like I said, it goes back to the problems that Germany have sometimes had in the final third, and you wondered, well, someone like Leroy Sané coming through and having the season that he did with Manchester City would be the absolutely ideal solution to that. And then for Löw to be so cold in the sense and to say, well, no, you've simply not performed in those 12 games. I think it's 12 for Germany.
That's the thing. When he talked about that, that's why he didn't bring Sané. One of the things that he mentioned was his performance in national team games and the fact that he was just injured during the Confederations Cup, which is just hilarious because I don't think any other coach has put as much weight on the Confederations Cup
And maybe that's to their detriment. Joachim Löw's going into his fourth World Cup, third as coach, isn't it? he's been there before, and he really has. I wrote a piece of the day saying he's perfected the art of international management. I think only Uruguay's coach, I believe, has been in charge of their team for longer. So maybe it's to everyone else's detriment that they don't take friendlies in between as seriously, or they don't take the Confederations Cup as seriously. But it says it all that he's taken Julian Brandt, because Julian Brandt did go to the Confederations Cup, did perform well there for Germany.
Has been a consistent call up from him by the way.
And these are players who fit not just from a tactical point of view, but also from a personal and a social point of view. They fit into Joachim Löw's system. He's been building this up year after year after year. I don't think the Sané decision was purely an overnight or even a decision made within a couple of weeks or months. I think that this has been building for over a year. And given Joachim Löw's record, it's ultimately very difficult to stand there and criticise and say, no, you've probably made a mistake here. Although, should Germany then experience the same problems they did at the Euros in not being able to break down those deep line defences, obviously the obvious questions are going to be asked, if you had a Leroy Sané in your ranks, who is more dangerous in one-on-one situations, then Löw might have questions to answer there.
Felix, do you think that Germany's going to miss Leroy Sané?
I personally don't think so. I think it caught us all by surprise, the fact that Leroy Sané isn't in the squad, but I think I'm speaking for all of us by saying that after Löw explained his decision, I think we sort of, it's sort of understandable, because Löw has his own system and his own methods, and his methods include a lot of thinking of the social side of things, of how his team is going to bond during the World Cup, and also in tactical terms. I think, as Matt said, if they're going to lose a crucial game because of not being able to break down a defense, then everybody's going to ask questions. But the bottom line is, I think most people who know a thing or two about Germany as a national team, as a football nation, were surprised by the decision, but it's not something that people say that's going to destroy our World Cup. Absolutely not.
I think one thing that we also have to keep in mind is that in terms of the players that were called into that preliminary squad, there are only three. I think it was Ter Stegen, Rudiger, and Kimmich that played more minutes during the season than Leroy Sané did. And then you look at that Austria friendly and how flat he looked. And when he was going at, I think it was Stefan Leiner for Austria. I mean, he couldn't even get past Stefan Leiner after he was going against the best of the Premier League in terms of fullbacks, and he looked a little flat, and I don't know how much of a role that would have played, but given the fact that he's played so much, I mean, who knows if he would have been at his peak at the World Cup, or because I think a lot of people may have expected what we saw in the Premier League from Leroy Sané, but he's played over 3,000 minutes in the Premier League and in the Champions League, so it's really difficult to expect a player who has been playing that much to do the same thing after a break in a six game tournament.
I think it's a fair point to mention, especially in the short term. Although I would throw in the caveat that they played on a completely waterlogged pitch in Austria, didn't they? So I'm not sure how that also played into it. However, I think that's true. It might have factored into Löw's short-term thinking, but as I said before, I think the decision was made long before that. Just to really underline what Felix said, when it comes to Joachim Löw's Germany side, you can't underestimate the importance he places on the social aspects of it, and he's been able to learn these lessons because of his longevity, because he's been there for so long. There's pretty much no other international manager who's been in the position for so long that they are even able to make these or to learn these lessons and make decisions based on them. But if you look back in Germany's case to 2012, Germany haven't had a bad tournament per se in decades, but in 2012 there was the issue with a slight split in the dressing room, wasn't there, between the Dortmund lads and the Bayern lads, given the domestic domestic beef between the two at the time, and Klopp winning two Bundesligas. Löw learned that lesson 2 years later in 2014, and when he talks about that tournament, he always emphasises the fantastic atmosphere, the togetherness, that common aim that they all had, and the really positive atmosphere at the camp in Brazil, and he always places great emphasis on that and saying that was one of the reasons they were able to go so far, and a lot of the other players have backed him up on that. So you just wonder that. I don't think it's a slight against Leroy Sané's personality. Lerv himself said that. But just a case that Lerv has his tried and tested systems, both tactically and in terms of his personnel. So why change a winning formula?
Well, part of that winning formula, it was, like you said, was the dressing room. And one of the outside pressures from the dressing room right now is what is hanging over the head of Mesut Ozil and İlkay Gundogan. If you haven't been following the national team very closely, I mean, I'll go through it quickly. Back in May, İlkay Gundogan and Mesut Ozil were at, a charity for Turkish nationals in England. And President Erdogan, Recep Erdogan, was there. And both of the players, along with, I cannot remember the third right now.
Cenk Tosun.
Yeah, Cenk Tosun, well, yeah. And then they took a picture with President Erdogan. With their jerseys from their clubs. Now, it looks very, very marketing on the surface, but also what I think outraged a lot of people was the fact that on Gundogan's jersey, he said to my president, İlkay Gundogan. And that infuriated a lot of Germany fans, which Matt will also get into in a second, but one of the main reasons is because both of those players don't sing the national anthem when the national anthem plays. Now, Gundogan did sing the national anthem in the Austria friendly, because he started that game. And I'm curious if that incident influenced. Gundogan has apologized for it and has come out and said that he was born and raised in Germany, so he is a German. But Matt, you mentioned earlier off the pod, I think you should talk about it, that Gundogan gave some really interesting comments today at the press conference that Germany had in Russia.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at the sort of depth that Reinhard Grindel, who's the head of the German FA, went into today in Russia, especially given the fact that the FA actually before the last friendly against Saudi Arabia had tried to draw a line under the whole thing and say, no, this has been dealt with. Gundogan in particular had come out and given interviews and came out and said, no, I believe in German values. I am a German. He was born in Gelsenkirchen, as was Mesut Ozil. They've both grown up here. And that's it. We then saw, of course, during the game that there were so many whistles and boos that, okay, maybe that wasn't it. So
sorry, there's one thing I should qualify. A lot of people saw this as a political statement because it was a Turkish-German player two Turkish-German players that were taking a picture with the Turkish president.
Now, just ahead of the elections in the country, by the way.
But yeah. what Gundogan said was that he did not intend to make a political statement with that picture, and I think that's important.
Yeah, we can only take İlkay Gundogan's word for that, and then we can speculate forever as to the extent to which they both knew what they were doing, or whether it was their agents putting them up to it, or whether they didn't understand, whether they did understand. I don't know how naive they are. Maybe they should know better, but I'm not sure if that's for us to speculate, or I don't think that would achieve much. But yeah, going back to what the German FA president said, I think it's quite important for the context of it, in that he pointed out that obviously, yeah, Germany is a very multicultural country, has been for a good number of decades now. And Grindel said today that was up in 2014, at least, when Germany won the World Cup, that was seen as purely a positive thing. It was seen as being enriching for Germany as a country, and the German national team was very much seen, even outside of football, as an example of that, as being a symbol of a modern Germany. Attitudes, I mean, we don't want to necessarily put an opinion on it, but in terms of the context, attitudes did change, and Grindel pointed this out after 2015-16, when there was a much heavier influx of immigrants after the refugee crisis, and that did change opinions in Germany, didn't it, slightly? The right-wing vote went up slightly, tensions did seem to increase slightly. That's not to say that all the refugees in Germany were poorly welcomed, that wasn't the case either. But yeah, that did seem to have an effect, and I think against that background and against that context, the fact that two players of Turkish heritage were seen having a photograph with a president who they referred to them as my president, who was actually the Turkish president. Again, against that background, it definitely didn't go down too well, especially given that these are players who are supposed to technically represent the values that modern Germany stands for. So, yeah, I was surprised that Reinhard Grindel went into so much depth, especially because they said that, no, we're drawing a line under it, it's finished. But, yeah, maybe the fact that there were so many whistles in Leverkusen maybe went, yeah, rammed home to them slightly that, oh, maybe this issue's not quite done with yet.
Yeah, and I got to say that Grindel, I mean, I criticized him a lot on a couple of matters, but I think on this topic, he's spot on in the sense that he's saying it like it is. It's saying it like many people think it is. I think in the last year, many football executives came up and spoke up against this the rise of the right wing in Germany. And as Matt says, you get the feeling that it sort of collides together. A multicultural national team, a multicultural nation, that comes at a price. It brings you success. It brings you a variety of ideas. It brings you a lot of pluses. But the minus is that you gotta take the other's heritage and history into consideration. Whatever they thought, whatever both players thought when they took that photo, we don't know. It's only for us and for other people to speculate. But the bottom line is they are of Turkish heritage. And such things might happen when you have players that are not... I don't know if to call it historically German, that's not the right term, but that are of different heritage. And that's this cultural diversity is something that all of us need to accept. And I think even welcome. I mean, yes, it's not always perfect. It's not always according to the values that many Germans see as, let's say, in an ideal world, everybody should believe in. But the bottom line is it brings a lot more to the country. And yes, it brings a lot more to the national team. So the bottom line is I do support Grindel's every word here. I think you get the feeling that in the last 2-3 years, there's a sense of change in the political aspect that affects a lot of walks of life. And I feel it's a bit of a shame that we now feel it with the national team, and hopefully it won't continue, but that remains to be seen.
So, but to go back to the national team, one of the things, especially after the friendly against Saudi Arabia and Leverkusen, one of the things that it seemed like the German, the DFB was trying to do, Oliver Bierhoff before the game, Joachim Löw after the game, and even Grindel at the DFB Pokal draw, they were just trying to basically put an end to this issue. And with Gundogan and Özil, but this doesn't seem like it's going away.
Yeah, which is why I think it's important that Grindel's now come out and recognised the context and spoken about the context and not simply brushed it under the carpet. Because, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Felix. It's not something that we want to see. We don't want to see tensions between Germans of different heritage, and in the majority of the cases that doesn't tend to happen, but when it does happen, it's more helpful to explain the context behind it, to explain why this might be a bigger issue now than it would have been maybe 4 years ago before the refugee crisis, and to speak about it openly and to talk about it, because like we said, I mean, whether we agree with it or not is irrelevant at the end of the day, but 15-20% of the German population did vote for a right-wing party, so the answer is not to brush that under the carpet. It's probably to speak about it and to understand why it's come to that. And like I said, I think what Gundogan and Özil did, whether they meant it or not, we don't know. Probably looks worse given the current situation than it would have done otherwise.
But Felix, there's a lot of Germany fans that are going to be traveling to Russia for the World Cup, especially considering the last World Cup. I mean, it's a hop, skip, and a jump compared to what it was in Brazil. Do we expect more whistles whenever Özil or Gundogan? I mean, Özil is going to be, it seems like he's going to be injured for the first match against Mexico, but if Özil or Gundogan are on the ball, do we expect whistles when they come on or when they're touching the ball?
That remains to be seen, but if we will hear whistles, I think it's going to become an even bigger deal. I think it's going to turn into a bigger discussion around, as per usual nowadays in Germany, I got to say, around this whole issue of immigration, how Germans accept migrants, how the general atmosphere towards migrants, considering the rise of the right wing, it's going to turn into a massive, massive talking point. And I think I just want to agree with what Matt just said. Grindel's attempt of trying to put an end to this after like a couple of attempts by Bierhoff that basically tried to sweep it under the carpet, I think it was a good idea. It was a good idea to say the issue is that this is what we're facing. The political issue is the political issue. The situation is the situation, and let's try and move forward.
Should they have gone to the World Cup? Should Gundogan and Özil gone to the World Cup? Because there are some players. I mean, one of the prominent ones that I saw today was that Stefan Effenberg, who was sent home after after a very obscene gesture. I'll just leave it at that. I believe it was 1990. Is that correct, or 1994?
You know better than
I think
me.
Basically, he said that Özil. I mean, the German national team has rules, and Özil and Gundogan kind of broke those unspoken rules, and they should be sent home. Do you feel that? Do you guys feel that way, or
no? I don't. Not at all. If Mr. Effenberg wants to say that, well, that's what to him. Seems to me quite a populist thing to say. Might sell a few newspapers and generate a few clicks, but no, I don't think that's the case at all. At the end of the day, Mesut Özil and Ilkay Gundogan are outstanding footballers, and whether they like it or not, representatives of a modern Germany. And there's no question whatsoever that they're going to go home. The fact that Oliver Bierhoff and Joachim Löw maybe wanted to brush it under the carpet slightly is a little bit more understandable given their focus on purely the football inside. I think Löw said similar again today that for him it is done. He's got a World Cup to focus on, so they don't want those distractions. Mm-hmm. But
it's worth pointing out that Reinhard Grindel, before he became the head of the DFB, was a politician. So, I mean,
yeah, you can tell,
and you can obviously you can tell what he's saying. And Löw and Bierhoff are former players. I don't think that they would have been able to say.
I wouldn't expect it either. But no, as for will the whistles continue in Russia? Personally, I don't think they will. I think there was maybe in Leverkusen a slight aspect of this was the first home game.
That's what I was thinking too. I think that was a major part of it, I think, was the fact that it was the first home game since that incident. And that was their opportunity to kind of voice their displeasure, which obviously, I mean, we've talked about it many times. Germany fans feel like they have the right to do. In many cases, they do have the right to do it, is just to voice their displeasure with what's happening on the pitch. So I think that, I definitely think that was the main factor with why they heard those whistles.
I do have a question though. Does any of you remember the time that Podolski uploaded a photo of his on Instagram? If I recall, saluting the Turkish flag or something while journalists like Deniz Yücel were in jail in Turkey? The answer is probably, I would assume some of you do, but most of our audience, I would assume they didn't even hear about this. And I think that just goes to show that there's I won't use some explicit terms, but there's a problematic approach as to players with, let's call it, that don't have the right heritage. And I think this case is, how do I put this? It just brings to light this whole topic of, again, integration of players of different backgrounds. And I think to answer your question, the bottom line is absolutely. They're both great footballers. They're some of the best. And that incident shouldn't have changed Löw's position when it comes to their call-ups. Absolutely not.
By the way, I want to apologize for my wife's parents' dog that's barking in the background. My dog-in-law in some way. Let's get back to this, what is away from this distraction, which I think will still be a distraction. Let's get back to the team, because Manuel Neuer looks like he's going to be the starting goalkeeper. And our colleague Jonathan Harding was at practice today, and he was saying that he was playing the sweeper keeper role that we all remember. So I wanted to ask this because I'm really curious of what you guys think. Do you think that Manuel Neuer is going to be the Manuel Neuer we remember? Because we have only seen him in two friendlies since last September, and we haven't really seen him be Manuel Neuer in a really long time. And basically, I'm wondering if you guys think that we will see him when the tournament starts in Russia.
We'll definitely see him. He'll definitely play. That's
well, we'll see him. Will we see the Manuel Neuer that we...
No, I don't. I don't think we will. I think that's the problem. Ultimately, I think Marc-André Ter Stegen should be Germany's number one at this World Cup. Manuel Neuer's coming off a period of 8 months without a single competitive game for Bayern or anyone else. He's not played a German competitive game since, I think, October 2016 or something like that. And when it comes to it, there's no denying that Manuel Neuer is a fantastic goalkeeper, arguably the best in the world, if not at the very least in the top three. So there's no doubt in his quality, but when it comes to it, what if he does make an error? What if something does go wrong, and if it's down to a lack of competitive match practice? I don't know. And then there's the other issue that has Marc-André Ter Stegen not deserved this? The season he's had in Spain with Barcelona, and the fact that he was the one in goal throughout Germany's 100% winning qualification campaign. I think on so many levels, he would have deserved that number one jersey. So as much as I personally disagree with the decision, I think it's a shame for Ter Stegen. However, when we take into account what we were talking about before with Joachim Löw and his longevity and his systems and his personalities and the emphasis he places on that, a part of me can also totally understand why he's made the decision that he has. So in that respect, it doesn't surprise me.
Do you think this is really a locker room thing? That's the reason why that Manuel Neuer...
Yeah, and I don't say that. I don't think that's a negative thing either. But I think in a lot of senses, where people say, "Oh, there's favoritism," the sort of thing Sandro Wagner was getting at when he had his rant after getting left out of the squad. I think he accused Löw of favoritism, saying, "Oh, obviously I don't fit into his little personality clique."
Well, he doesn't. So
no, he didn't. Obviously, yeah, that's also the
case. So that wasn't correct.
Sorry, Sandro, but yeah, they've got a point. They've got a point there. Yeah, personality clique is probably a too strong a word, but yeah, Löw does emphasise the issue of personality and continuity in his squad, and Manuel Neuer is the captain. He's an experienced man, he's experienced at the very top level, and there was never any doubt that if he was fit, he was going to be in it. So I can, while it didn't totally surprise me, and I can understand it, I do personally feel sorry for Ter Stegen at the end of the day.
Do you feel the same way, Felix?
I do. I do think that we've just commended Löw's sense of understanding of his squad, of his sense of understanding the social aspect of things, etc. The one thing that's also, for the most part, very understandable is his aspiration for stability, for having the same players that he knows what to expect, both in social, personal, and professional terms.
We had Ter Stegen throughout an unbeaten qualifying campaign. That's stability.
Absolutely, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. I think this is going to be the big question in terms of how Germany is going to perform. I think Neuer's role and Neuer's performances are going to be looked at by every single one of us. The big question, absolutely, because I don't think there's, other than the Leroy Sané thing maybe, but other than that, I don't think there's any massive question around Germany. The squad is balanced. We all know the depths they have in their squad, but the bottom line is how Neuer is going to perform, and I really do agree. Ter Stegen should have been the starting goalkeeper, if only for his great season with Barcelona, for having this long run of matches in which he played. And I personally don't think there's any replacement to actual game time. And once you don't have that for such a long time, I suspect it might come back to haunt Germany.
It is the definition of an embarrassment of riches. But to me, I mean, if Manuel Neuer is 100% fit, which he looks like he is,
By all accounts, he's come back better than ever, hasn't he?
If he is in fact 100% fit, is he not the best goalkeeper in the world?
I think the problem with that is that being 100% physically fit doesn't mean that he's 100%. I'm not sure mentally fit is the right term, but
Have you seen any signs of that though in these two friendlies?
I haven't.
One and a half friendlies. Yeah. Ter Stegen came on for the second half against Saudi Arabia.
Rounding up. Come on.
I haven't, to be honest. But the bottom line is there is no replacement to that confidence that a goalkeeper should have. And this confidence only comes if you have a good run of games. Once you don't, that might come back to haunt you. And I think, I understand the argument that Neuer is a very experienced goalkeeper. He's a goalkeeper that, as Matt said, easily one of the top three goalkeepers in the world right now or in general. But the bottom line is it's very, very hard to see how he's going to perform having not played for so long.
So you just called him one of the best top three goalkeepers if he's 100% fit, right?
If.
Is Marc-Andre ter Stegen also one of the top three goalkeepers in the world?
Yeah, I'd put them.
He's up there, definitely.
I'd put them both just beneath David De Gea, but yeah.
Yeah, David De Gea, yeah, of course. But that's the thing. I mean, if you don't consider Marc-Andre ter Stegen a top three goalkeeper, which I wouldn't necessarily say I would, and I don't necessarily say I wouldn't. I would have to look at it more closely. But but to me, I still have no doubt that Manuel Neuer, if he's fit, his instincts, his shot stopping ability, and his ability to play the ball with his feet is unparalleled to any other goalkeeper in the world.
Two of those things are true, but the key word you said was instinct. And yeah. Have they suffered slightly having had 8 months out?
Absolutely.
The two goals that he allowed against Austria were, I mean, there
no, they,
was
no,
way.
They weren't, no, they weren't his fault. No one's saying that they...
I mean,
no,
René
no
Adler was in the German broadcast, and he said, no way Manuel Neuer would have made that. And no goalkeeper would have made
this. No one's saying that they were his fault, and they weren't down to instincts either. Though he wasn't going to stop them. He actually played very, very well against Austria. But who knows? We'll see, won't we? If he misjudges anything by just a couple of seconds out or a couple of milliseconds out,
yeah,
when going for a cross or when timing a ball out, then the questions will be asked. It might not happen, and except by all accounts in the reports coming out of the training camp, he's come back sharper and more commanding and better than ever, and there's absolutely no problem with him fitness wise or instinct wise so we'll see. It might turn out to not be a problem whatsoever. But if it is, similar with the Leroy Sané issue, if it does become a problem, then fingers will be pointed, won't they?
I also think that Ter Stegen's role at Barcelona hasn't been so different than what Löw expects from Neuer. He is a sweeper keeper. He plays with his feet, and he's proved himself. So that makes me wonder even more why he isn't getting the chance, at least in the first one or two games. But again, as Matt said, this is what it is. It is what it is. We have Neuer, and the slightest of mistakes is going to trigger a lot of questions.
Now, you mentioned that that Manuel Neuer's performance is going to be one of the biggest question marks. What other big question marks do you have, Matt, about this team?
Will Timo Werner step up? He's got the quality to do so. He's got the capability to do so, the confidence to do so. And I believe he will. I'm excited to see what he can do. And then obviously the question after that will be, will Red Bull Leipzig be able to keep him? Because they're no longer a Champions League team, and they don't need the money, but we'll see where that goes. So yeah, that'll certainly be interesting. Marco Reus's first World Cup tournament, first international tournament. So I'm excited to see how he gets on. Same for Joshua Kimmich as well. They're my three main names.
Well, I mean, Joshua Kimmich played at the Euros, so it's not like he's
first World Cup. Then, yeah.
Yeah, but Felix, do you have any other question marks? Because I have one that I want to talk about, but I'll let you.
I mean, the first thing I want to talk about is obviously Reus. I don't think there's any doubt he's going to bring a lot to the team, but the question is how is Löw going to use him in a tactical sense of the word?
That's true.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see what Reus is going to bring to Germany. We all know what a massive player he is. We all know what a talent he is, what he can do. The only question is, will Löw manage to create the tactical and arguably social setup for him to bring it to the World Cup? And if that will happen, we're in for a treat. That's not even a question. Another point I wanted to mention is Jonas Hector, his first World Cup. I don't think he's faced by anything at this stage, but I'm just happy for him. He's a great player. He did so well for Germany and arguably for Cologne, despite the relegation. It's going to be interesting to see how this cold-headed, very, very calm person is handling the massive pressure of a World Cup.
A lot of people have kind of circled the left-back position as one of the weak spots in Germany. Do you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, it probably is, isn't it? Although pointing out a weak spot in that entire squad is difficult. Maybe that's directed somewhat at the lack of depth there. With Hector and Marvin Plattenhardt.
I was really surprised you took both.
Well, there's no one else, is there, really? That's... apart from Philipp Max at Augsburg, perhaps.
Well, I mean, I feel like Jerome Boateng would even be a better, maybe even be a better option than Marvin Plattenhardt on the left.
Neither are orthodox left-backs. Not that I think it'll be a problem. Jonas Hector is solid. Whether Plattenhardt even ends up getting a game or not remains to be seen. But yeah, it's a weak spot in a ridiculously strong team. It'll be interesting to see how they deal as a team and as a whole with the added pressure that comes with trying to defend your world title. It's only been done twice in the past. It'll be interesting to see how they go about it.
So the biggest question I think that... I don't think a lot of people are talking about to be the most hipster on this podcast. What Thomas Müller are we going to see? Are we going to see the 2014 Thomas Müller? Or are we going to see that almost won the Golden Boot? Or are we going to see the 2016 Thomas Müller, who I don't believe scored a goal in that tournament?
No, well, I hope and I also think that we'll see the 2014 version of him. He'll be playing back in his more favoured role. He's not going to be used as...
Why do you say that? Because he's been playing on the right. He played on the right against in the Euros as well.
True, but the way he lines, whether it's Müller or Özil also remains to be seen. But out of those three that start across they're going to start behind Timo Werner Özil, Müller, Draxler, Royce. So three of them. I think often it's relatively irrelevant how they line up. They tend to switch and chop and change throughout the game anyway. So yeah, you'll see them switching sides or Müller ending up on the left or right. So I don't think that'll be an issue. I think the main point is that he won't be up front pretending to be an out-and-out striker, which was the problem in France at times.
No, well, he did. But the thing is, I mean, Mario Gomez played up top in France mostly. I mean, he did mostly play on the right. So that's why I'm asking the question, because Felix, he's going to be... I think that the biggest difference maybe that we saw, especially against Saudi Arabia, that is that there was a lot of chopping and changing, and he was able to combine with players the way that Thomas Müller combines with players. Are you worried about Thomas Müller at all? Do you think if he's not at his best, that Germany is going to be in trouble?
I don't think so, first of all, because Germany's squad is just insanely deep. I wouldn't say I'm worried, but I do think Thomas Müller's sort of on and off season at Bayern sort of suggests that he won't be the player we expect him to be. Having said that, it's a World Cup, and as we've seen before, when it comes to the World Cup, he steps up. It's also a mental thing. I mean, once there's a big tournament coming up, yeah, arguably he wasn't good at the Euros, but the previous World Cup, he did brilliantly well. He stepped up, and he did what many people didn't expect him. And now it's going to be a big question, but the bottom line is I think he will perform given the chance. I'm not sure what Löw is planning in tactical sense. That remains to be seen. But I do think if given the chance behind the striker, like he knows to play in those spaces, we're going to see Thomas Müller producing. I really do think so.
Only two teams have done it. Are Germany going to defend their World Cup title, Matt?
Instinct actually says no. Someone asked me the other day, and I went for Brazil straight away.
I really like Brazil.
And I'm not even sure why. Only two of them have done it before, haven't they? We'll see how it goes. They're capable of it, and I think if they do it, the key to it will be will be the stability and longevity that Joachim Löw has built up, and it'll be the ultimate crowning moment in a progression over what by that point will be, I believe, 12 years and 3 days worth of work with the national team for Joachim Löw. So it's certainly possible, but it can come down to the tiniest of margins, can't it? And given the problems that I thought Brazil caused Germany in that friendly in Berlin a couple of weeks ago, I think that a couple of months ago, I think that performance, and not just the result, just the performance and the fact they we all know that Brazil have got flair. We all know that how dangerous the likes of Neymar can be. But they showed they could also hold on to a lead. They were tactically well organised. They were solid. And Germany barely even came close. And I thought that was a key improvement and a massive difference to the Brazil that we saw in 2014, who clearly got ridiculously carried away with the whole emotion of it, which maybe you can understand, given that they were hosting it and there was all the hype around Neymar, wasn't there?
Yeah, Neymar was hurt and Thiago Silva was suspended.
But maybe that clip, but it clearly got them in from an emotional point of view as well. And it seemed to me, just in that game in Brazil, in Berlin, that they've added that little bit to their game. That they've also got a bit of stability and maybe, yeah, a little bit more cool headedness about them, which I think might stand them in good stead.
Felix,
I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. I'm going to say, first of all, I want to agree with something that Matt said. The key is going to be longevity and stability. And Germany has that. So they're capable, absolutely. And I think, at the end of the day, it will come down to the smallest of things. But the bottom line is they have what it takes. And I think that at the end of the day, they're definitely in it. And at the end of the day, I really do think they'll win it.
I think there was a sports show poll that said before the 2014 World Cup that 20% of Germans believed that Germany would win it. And this time around, it was 50% of Germans think that they would win it. I really don't think that Germans know really what they're talking about, except for maybe 5% of them. So no, I don't think that Germany is going to win the World Cup. Before we get out of here, let's go around the field a little bit more. Rather than talking about our dark horses or who we think is going to win, all three of us, I should say, are going to be watching a lot of the games. What team are you most excited to watch in Brazil in Russia, and why?
France, for one of the same reasons as Germany, but just the absolutely ridiculous amount of talent at their disposal.
So much.
Yeah. And so much talent. I think having both Martial and Lacazette been left at home, for example.
Coman is also hurt.
So. Kingsley Coman as well, not in the squad. Incredible amount of depth. And they were big favourites at the Euros, obviously, as well. I think the step that they had to take in those two intermediate years was can they combine that that group of individuals almost with that obscene amount of individual talent into a proper collective, we'll see if Didier Deschamps has managed that. But a coach going into yet another tournament with the experience and stability and longevity behind him, not quite on the same level as Joachim Löw yet. But building up that way, and so excited to see how they get on. And,
I don't know if Didier Deschamps is a good coach, though. That's the only thing. Felix, do you have a team that you want to watch?
I have two, actually. One, the first team.
No, just pick one. Come on.
It's very hard.
Just say your two. Just say.
Okay,
two.
Thank you. The two are, first of all, I think we've spoken about it the other day, Davis. The first team I'm really excited to watch is Poland, because nobody really talks about the talent in this team. Nobody really talks about how this team could develop into a collective.
The talent, singular, talent in this team, yes.
Yeah, not only Lewandowski. I can see you smirking over there, but it's not only Lewandowski.
I'm a bit chagrined because I drew Poland in an office pool, and it's not as bad as...
Better than Morocco.
Yeah, it's better, not as bad as the Morocco that Matt drew, but not as bad as the Russia that another colleague of ours...
Yeah, two yellows down the drain.
Yeah.
but I do think that Poland's defense is well organized. It's a team that could develop into something special. And the second team, and this is going to come as a surprise to most of you, is England. Because I think England, the England
Matt just,
team.
Matt just almost spit up water that he had in his mouth.
I was expecting that. But I think there's an interesting process going on with the England national team, because previously you've had all those big superstars, all the Lampards and the Gerrards, etc. And nowadays you get the sense that this is a team that's more, let's call it, representative of what England is nowadays. It's a relatively, it's not such an old team, not that many superstars as you would expect. And I think Gareth Southgate has the potential to be what the England team needs him to be. And at the end of the day, I really think England could pull a surprise. I don't think they can win it. Absolutely not. I think it's an interesting process that's been going on there. But I definitely think they're not going to disappoint as much as people expect them to.
For so many people who have said that, though, I've heard so many people, I mean, a lot of them are English, so maybe that's part of it, but so many people have said to me, they have no expectations. If they do anything, there it's going to be a surprise. And I'm like, if you say
just
that...
Wait till they win the first game, and their expectations will go through the roof.
Exactly. I think that they're just destined to be ripped in papers until hell freezes over, pretty much. The team that I really like, which I actually was turned on to recently, I think it was a podcast that I was listening to recently, and then I actually looked into it, and I was surprised at some of the cases that have been made for them. Uruguay is in the best group, hands down. If they win their group, then they have a chance to face France in the quarterfinals, and they have basically a lot of something that a lot of teams don't have, and is two superstars. And the argument that I can make for them is, if you see what Netherlands did 4 years ago with basically three attackers almost, with Wesley Sneijder and Robert Van Persie and Arjen Robben, and then you look at the fact that Edinson Cavani and Luis Suarez have been playing together forever in the national team, as long as they stay organized in midfield, and they have some midfield talent, obviously with Ben Tucker in midfield, and in defense, obviously with Godin and Jose Jimenez. But if they can stay organized and get the ball to their basically their key playmakers, I mean, the semifinals, they could make the semifinals. That's not to me, that's not actually that unreasonable to say. And when you make the semifinals, I think that at that point, I mean, with extra time and penalties, anything can happen.
Both Portugal and Greece have shown in recent years that it can be done in a tournament, can't it? But yeah, the ultimate tournament team is still Germany, though, aren't they?
Yeah, here's to hoping we'll keep it that way, but remains to be seen. I do think Uruguay is the footballer's team, almost. Like, they can be very hard in defense, they can be... they're very tenacious. They run a lot, and they have the likes of Luis Suarez. So the sort of national team that you can either love or hate. And I think it adds lots of color to the World Cup. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be interesting to see their tactical lineup. And it's not good. I don't think it's gonna be a full on surprise if they're gonna get to, say, semifinal.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing too. And as long as Luis Suarez keeps his teeth out of people, I think that they can go far. All right, that's enough World Cup talk for now. We will have reactions to all the Germany games throughout the tournament, even the World Cup final if they get that far. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford at Matt_4D, Felix Thompson at F Thompson, and I'm at Davis_Fanopoulos. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the World Cup festivities, and we'll be back soon.